Welcome to today's reading of the Midland Reporter Telegram and the Odessa American, read by volunteers and staff. You can hear this program on Recording Library of West Texas Radio and on demand at recordinglibrary.org.
Hi, this is Jack. I'm reading the Midland Reporter Telegram for Saturday, May 8, 2021, weekend edition. Section A, meeting the community's priorities. New director. MDC has shown versatility to meet Midland's needs. By Stuart Doreen. Later this month, Sarah Harris takes over as the new Midland Development Corp Executive Director. Harris currently serves as the Director of Operations and previously worked as Interim Executive Director during one of the more transformative periods the Development Corporation has known. Sarah is the ultimate professional, says Wesley Bounds, Board Chairman for the Midland Development Corp. She is knowledgeable, meticulous, and always courteous. Her recommendations are based on the facts, and she never loses sight of what is in Midland's best interest. The following is a question and answer with Sarah Harris, the new Executive Director of the Midland Development Corporation. MRT, what do you think about the recent conversation about economic development? There's been a kind of emphasis put on it. Is that good for what's going on at the MDC right now? Sarah Harris, I think dialogue is always healthy. The MDC was approved by the taxpayers, and it's a tool of the taxpayers and the city council. And as such, it needs to be discussed and evaluated as an entity and our projects. I think a main point to hit is the MDC is extremely versatile. MDC can pivot to meet the needs of the community and the priorities of the city council in a way that few other government organizations can because of the way that we're structured by the local government code. And to that purpose, we've had the opportunity to fill our needs that the community saw in education, in our investment with UTPB, and in healthcare by partnering with Texas Tech University Health Science Center for Child and Adolescent Psychiatry, and also for the Physician Assistant Program expansion. And we've been able to address crucial needs in infrastructure with the projects with TxDOT to improve main lanes and interchanges at points around Loop 250, and projects like widening State Highway 349 going north out of town. So where there's a need, the MDC can come in and help fill it and meet it as the community develops with guidance from the City Council and our board. MRT. Has there been any misconceptions that you've heard recently about economic development? Maybe even the MDC's role moving forward? Sarah Harris. A misconception might be that the MDC is limited in what it can do. Certainly, one of our organizational missions is strengthening and diversifying the economy. But we can also work with education, we can work with healthcare, we can work with infrastructure, and importantly, a lot of the MDC's initiatives have directly benefited Midland's core industry, which is oil and gas. Texas Tech Health Science Center Physician Assistant Program expansion was something that the oil and gas industry indicated that they supported, as shown by the Permian Strategic Partnership's financial support. The MDC has partnered with Midland College to expand their CDL program to provide qualified drivers for the industry and to fund their dual credit and career technology education program with MISD, which helps direct students into the Petroleum Academy and other targeted workforce programs. So diversification is only part of the potential. MDC can certainly do that, but we can be here for the community to meet targeted needs in many areas. MRT. And would the MDC's agreement with WEIR be an example of the MDC being supportive of what's going on in the oil and gas industry? Yes, absolutely. Not only are they a key player in pump manufacturing here in Midland, the facility added to Midland's tax base about $30 million, and they created a substantial number of new jobs. So yes, that's also an indication of our support for the industry. MRT. A lot of people, when they think about economic development and diversification efforts, going to point 10 years ago, but certainly things have happened since the departure of a couple of tenants at the airport, including X-Corps and Orbital Outfitters. But a lot of things have happened at the Spaceport Business Park. You actually have quite a bit of activity going on out there. Can you tell us about some of those, Sarah? Absolutely. The departure of the previous tenants functioned as a springboard to bring in new opportunities to Midland, because most of the funds that were expended at the Spaceport Business Park were put into assets that belonged to the airport and were used to attract new tenants. So the MDC worked to deploy existing assets to bring in new companies, including AST and Science, a satellite manufacturer. SpaceX's model uses a satellite to beam a signal to a tower, which then beams a signal to a phone or device. AST's satellite arrays bypass the tower completely, so there is no need for any ground infrastructure. The signal goes from satellite to phone, providing communications and internet connectivity and capability to places in the world that have never had it previously, such as less developed equatorial areas. So that's a really exciting addition to Midland. It's a major manufacturing entity out there. Right now, committed up to 160 jobs in Midland, but they do have aggressive expansion plans as well. MRT. And it's not a case where AST came here based on some big development corporation check. Sarah. There's no cash incentive associated with their presence here. They're just receiving lease abatement as they meet and maintain the certifications associated with their agreement. MRT. How does the MDC view the Spaceport Business Park moving forward and the opportunities there? Sarah. Certainly there are opportunities to bring in additional aerospace companies to Midland that will offer great jobs and opportunities for Midlanders, and that is something that we are pursuing. MRT. What do you want to talk about when it comes to the MDC, economic development in Midland? Sarah. Something that is very pressing on me is our employment rate here. Midland has always been a place where people come for opportunity, for good jobs. They know that they can afford to raise their families based on the wages they get here. And so it's very distressing to see high unemployment. And something that I want the MDC to really focus on is bringing jobs into Midland that can help those who've lost their jobs or want new opportunities. I think about it daily, and while the oil and gas industry is our core industry and will always be here, there are also ways that we can work to make sure that there are more opportunities. MRT. Isn't that just part of how it is in a cyclical economy? One year we are at 2-point-something% unemployment. The next year, if times aren't as good, it could be 9 or 10% unemployment. Susan. Sarah. Certainly. And it's not the government's role to make sure everyone is employed. And it's not the MDC's role to offer everyone a job. But the MDC can deploy its resources to attract industries that offer opportunities to Midland, to people who want to work and live here. MRT. What should people know about you, why this is an opportunity right now that you're excited about? Sarah. I came to Midland 6 years ago, and I didn't have experience with being part of a close-knit community. I'd lived in Lubbock, and I felt somewhat disconnected there, even though I was part of a student community and had friends. What I've experienced from Midland in terms of being welcomed by the community, finding opportunities to volunteer and participate, and meeting the people I've had the privilege of working with at MDC has been incredibly impactful. I consider Midland my home, and I have deep feelings for the city and the people who live here. I have a son who's 2. He's a fourth-generation Midlander on his father's side, and I wake up every day, and I want to make sure that this town offers him and his generation the same opportunities that I see here. And that's why I love working here and why I love being in Midland. MPD. Crime rate falls, homicides jump in 2020. By Stuart Doreen. Declines in higher-level theft crimes helped bring down the total number of crimes across the city by 1.7% in 2020. Midland Police Department numbers showed that Part 1 crimes dropped from 3902 in 2019 to 3834, and leading the way was a 9% decline in larceny theft and 11.99% decline in motor vehicle theft. Those two categories accounted for 73% of the total crimes in 2020. Part 1 crimes, where there were increases, included criminal homicide, forcible rape, assault, Part 1, and burglary. MPD reported an equal number of burglaries in 2020 compared to 2019. MPD reported the number of criminal homicides in 2020 was more than 2018 and 2019 combined, and marked the only time since at least 2008 that the number hit double digits. MPD statistics also show a 30% drop from 4929 to 3452 in arrests in 2021. That included a 28% drop in adult arrest and a 61% decline in juvenile arrests. Adult arrests made up more than 96% of the total arrests during the year. Animal shelter nears capacity with 151 animals, by J.C. Lewis. The Midland Animal Shelter is nearing capacity. Since May 1st, the shelter has impounded 70 dogs and 63 cats. There are currently 101 dogs and 50 cats at the shelter, according to Animal Services Manager Leah Lewis. The shelter has transferred 23 cats to another rescue. The shelter is open intake. That means no animal in the shelter's jurisdiction is ever turned away from the shelter, regardless of health, age, or temperament. While the shelter works with animal organizations, the shelter still needs the community's help. Since May 1st, 23 owners have surrendered their animals to the shelter. On Friday, just 3 hours after opening, staff had taken in 17 animals. 15 of those were taken at the facility in East Midland. Adopting a pet is a lifelong commitment, and responsible pet ownership is key to reducing the number of animals entering the shelter. The shelter works with numerous animal placement organizations through the Placement Partner Program, which helps facilitate an adoption of stray, abandoned, and relinquished animals. It's important to remember pets require yearly vaccinations and preventative care, exercise, socialization, and need to be kept confined. For people considering surrendering a pet, Lewis said the pets need to be up to date on vaccinations and to bring their records at the time of surrender. If possible, Lewis said to try to rehome a pet through a rescue before considering the shelter. Rescues will work with individuals to place the pet in a new home without the animal ever having to enter the shelter. Area rescues include Lone Star Sanctuary for Animals. The rescue is open every other day, 1 to 5, and closed on Thursday. Grand Companions opened a satellite adoption center in Midland. For more information, visit grandcompanions.org. Dust Bowl Animal Rescue, which is a foster-based rescue. For more information, visit dustbowlanimalrescue.com. Lewis added that it's important to check the fence and or tether on a daily basis to ensure there are no weaknesses or areas of concern. Gates should be secured to keep animals from escaping. Pets should wear an identification tag and make sure microchip information is up to date. Lewis said the shelter has a great selection of animals that need a loving forever home. The adoption fee is $62 and includes sterilization, a rabies vaccination, city license, parvo distemper vaccine, Bordetella, and microchip. Lewis emphasized the need to spay and neuter pets to help reduce the overpopulation of animals in the community. The city currently has a voucher program to assist with the cost of sterilization. In order to obtain a $70 voucher, the owner of the pet must live within the city limits and provide proof of address in the form of a current utility, phone, or cable bill. In addition, the owner must provide vaccination records verifying their pet is up to date on their vaccination and proof of a current city license. Vouchers are good for 14 days from the date of issuance, so the surgery appointment must be scheduled within the 2-week window. The owner can either pick up a voucher at the shelter or submit a voucher request online. It is not necessary or required to bring pets to the shelter to obtain a voucher. Fix West Texas can also provide low-cost spay and neuter services. For more information, visit fixwesttexas.org. Abby Johnson headlines pro-life event in Midland, by Stuart Doreen. Abby Johnson, a well-recognized supporter of the pro-life movement, will be among the speakers at A Celebration of Life, which is scheduled to take place at 10 a.m. today at the Scarborough Sports Complex. Her defection from her pro-abortion leadership position at Planned Parenthood to bold and outspoken champion for life, exemplified by her address to the Republican National Convention in 2020, is nothing short of miraculous, wrote Mike Bansbach of Pro-Life Midland in an email. The life-saving effect she has had in influencing the Texas legislature to pass pro-life legislation, as well as assisting abortion facility workers to leave their jobs through her nonprofit, and then there were none, cannot be qualified. Other speakers scheduled include Bishop Michael Siss of San Angelo, Midland Mayor Patrick Payton, County Judge Terry Johnson, State Rep Tom Craddock, U.S. Rep August Pfluger, and Joe Pogeman of the Texas Alliance for Life. Prior to the start, there will be a classic car caravan leading to the event. There also will be a car show, ministry fair, children's activities, including face painting and bouncy foods, bouncy houses, food trucks, music, and entertainment. Diamondback and Pioneer report first quarter losses. Diamondback, quarter one earnings, a snapshot. Diamondback Energy on Monday reported first quarter net income of $220 million after reporting a loss in the same period a year earlier. The Midland-based company said it had net income of $1.33 per share. Earnings adjusted to non-recurring costs came to $2.30 per share. The results exceeded Wall Street expectations. The average estimate of 11 analysts surveyed by Zacks Investment Research was for earnings of $1.73 per share. The energy exploration and production company posted revenue of $1.18 million in the period, which also beat Street forecasts. Seven analysts surveyed by Zacks expected $1.02 billion. Diamondback shares have climbed 73% since the beginning of the year. In the final minutes of trading on Monday, shares hit $83.92, more than doubling in the last 12 months. Pioneer Natural Resources on Tuesday reported a first quarter loss of $70 million after reporting a profit in the same period a year earlier. On a per share basis, the Irving-based company said it had a loss of 33 cents. Earnings adjusted for non-recurring costs came to $1.77 per share. The results topped Wall Street expectations. The average estimate for seven analysts surveyed by Zacks was for earnings of $1.50 per share. Pioneer Natural Resources shares have risen 39% since the beginning of the year, while the S&P's 500 index has risen 11%. In the final minutes of trading on Tuesday, shares hit $158.45, a rise of 91%. Rattler Midstream on Tuesday reported first quarter earnings of $6 million. The Midland-based company said it had net income of 13 cents per share. Earnings adjusted for non-recurring costs were 16 cents per share. The oil and gas services provider posted revenue of $98.8 million in the period. Rattler Midstream shares have climbed 18% since the beginning of the year. ProPetro Holding Corp. on Tuesday reported a loss of $20.4 million in its first quarter. The Midland-based company said it had a loss of 20 cents per share. The results fell short of Wall Street expectations. The oilfield services company posted revenue of $161.5 million in the period, which also did not meet Street forecasts. ProPetro shares have risen 40% since the beginning of the year. In the final minutes of trading on Tuesday, shares hit $10.36, more than doubling in the last 10 months. Viper Energy Partners LP on Monday reported a loss of $3 million in its first quarter. The Midland-based company said it had a loss of 5 cents per share. Losses adjusted came to 8 cents per share. The results fell short of Wall Street expectations. The oil and gas company posted revenue of $97 million in the period. Viper Energy shares have increased 58% since the beginning of the year. In the final minutes of trading on Monday, shares hit $18.31, more than doubling in the last 12 months. Rig count jumped 7 in Midland County by Mella McEwen. Rig activity gained some momentum this week. Oilfield services firm Baker Hughes and data analytics firm Enverus reported Friday the U.S. rig count jumped 8 rigs to 448 following last week's 2 rig rise and is 74 rigs higher than that reported a year earlier. There were 344 rigs drilling for crude, up 2 this week, and 54 more than the 292 drilling for oil last May. There were 103 rigs drilling for natural gas, up 7 for the week. Texas gained 5 rigs to 277. Lee County, New Mexico, remains the most active in the Permian with 38 rigs. Midland County jumped 7 rigs to 30 for the week. Reeves County added 2. Martin County was unchanged. Loving County added 1. Reagan County added 4 rigs with working within county lines. Upton reported 12 rigs, down 2. Howard County's rig count plunged by 8. According to Enverus Rig Analytics, the U.S. rig count is up 5% on the month and up 39% year over year. The most active operator continues to be Pioneer Natural Resources, which includes 9 that were added just through the acquisition of Double Point Energy on May 4th. EOG Resources is running 20 rigs, ConocoPhillips 17, Devon Energy 15, Occidental 14. The most active private operators are Mubin Oil at 11, Endeavor Energy at 10, and Aethon Energy at 8.
Hello, this is Michael, continuing reading the inside pages of the Midland Reporter Telegram that were published Saturday, May 8th, 2021. Railroad Commission states Midland region again dominates Texas for permits and completions. More than 56% of the drilling permits and greater than 53% of the oil completions inside the state of Texas during the month of April took place in the Midland region, according to Railroad Commission of Texas. The RRC's Midland region accounted for 357 of the 629 permits from around the state. The next closest region was Refugio with 57. RRC statistics also showed the Midland region with 254 of the 403 oil completions from the 12 commission regions around the state. The next closest region was the San Angelo region with 36. The third category is gas completions, and the Midland region was second to the East Texas region. The Midland region accounted for 31 gas completions, or 36.47% of the 85 across the state. East Texas accounted for 33. The Railroad Commission reported a total of 732 original drilling permits, which also includes permits to re-enter plugged wellbores and permits for recompletions of existing wellbores in April, compared to 456 in April 2020. In April, Commission staff processed 449 oil, 106 gas, and 98 injection completions for new drills, re-entries, and recompletions. Crude prices post second weekly gain. Crude prices rose this week, fueled by optimism about global oil demand and shrinking U.S. inventories. Bloomberg reported oil prices on the New York Mercantile Exchange rose 2.1% for the week, the first back-to-back weekly increases since early March. After posting gains of 91 cents and $1.20 on Monday and Tuesday, West Texas Intermediate on the NYMEX lost 98 cents Wednesday and Thursday before gaining 19 cents to end the week at $64.90 a barrel. That's up from $64.49 a barrel at Monday's close. Posted prices closed the week at $61.38, according to Plains All American. Natural gas prices held steady for the week, closing Friday at $2.958 per MCF, up 3 cents, but down from the $2.966 at Monday's close. Bryce Erickson, senior vice president at Mercer Capital, told the Reporter Telegram by email he doesn't believe recent optimism about economic recovery or oil demand has been overblown, given the macro factors at play. I would attribute it more to factors driving the natural short-term volatility associated with oil prices. Noting in a blog how crude prices went into the abyss last April 20th, when future prices fell to a negative $38 a barrel, Erickson blogged, "What a difference a year makes." He went on to note that prices have spent most of the past month at or above $60, and a number of analysts predict prices will stay in the 60s or higher for the remainder of the year, though the Energy Information Administration projects prices in the mid-50s. One thing that is different this time around may be the cautiousness of investors and producers to jump back on the drill bit right away, Erickson wrote on his blog. Jason Moglen, president of the Texas Alliance of Energy Producers, told the Reporter Telegram by email that he too is seeing continued caution. "We continue to see positive signs for prices as the economy picks up and a post-COVID recovery continues both here and abroad," he wrote. "Operators are responding with continued discipline and steady growth in jobs and additional rigs as demand increases." Oil prices reflect a world market. Dan Natz, executive vice president with the Independent Petroleum Association of America, told the Reporter Telegram by email. He added that the Biden administration's policies designed to stop production of American oil and natural gas have caused the world and markets to notice. "Policies have consequences. The markets are watching the actions of the Biden administration and are clearly concerned. Products that discourage more American oil and natural gas production will result in less jobs, lost revenues to federal, state, and local treasuries, and more uncertainty for world markets." Still, Erickson said on his blog that producers and investors are in a lot better place than last year. "In addition, with all of the attention towards electric vehicles replacing the combustion engine, we must remind ourselves that only 1% of the U.S. light fleet is EV, and that light vehicles only make up 25% of crude oil use. Demand will not be chopped out from the oil's feet just yet," he blogged. "Markets are fast-moving and unforgiving at times, but it appears with $60 plus oil prices for 2021 that the upstream business can now start to slow down, look around, and evaluate what direction to go next."
Hello, this is Cindy reading a community calendar from the Midland Reporter Telegram for Saturday, May 8th. Meetings: Commissioner's Court, 9 a.m. Monday, Midland County Courthouse, Auxiliary Courtroom, 500 North Lorraine Avenue. Midland City Council, 10 a.m. Tuesday, Council Chambers, City Hall, 300 North Lorraine Avenue. Midland County Republican Women, 11:30 a.m. Wednesday, Midland Country Club. Guest speakers are James Beecham of Motran and Tommy Taylor of Fasken Oil and Ranch. $25 per person with a reservation. $30 a person without a reservation. RSVP deadline is 5 p.m. Monday. Call Erica at 817-372-1465 to RSVP. City of Midland Aquatics will hold its Community Day on May 15th. From 8 to 11 a.m. that day, adults interested can take advantage of six-week adult memberships for $25 and have access to all adult programs COM offers. From 2 to 4 p.m., kids can have a fun 2 hours at the pool, take part in COM swimming and dive team tryouts, and have access to discounts for junior camps and swim or dive team memberships. Events activities: Storytime for Young Readers, 10 to 11 a.m. Thursday, George W. Bush Childhood Home. Victory Run and Walk with Midland Rock Hounds and Gifts of Hope, 7 to 10 a.m. May 15th. Momentum Bank Ballpark. Call Gifts of Hope at 218-8714 or visit giftsofhopetx.org for more information. Midland and Odessa Young Professionals Joint Meetings, 7 p.m. May 15th. League of Women Voters Midland Annual Meeting, 6:30 p.m. May 17th. MGMS Outdoor Market, 9 a.m. May 22nd, 602 South Main Street. Keys for Hope Clay Shoot Fundraiser benefiting Gifts of Hope, June 18th, Midland Shooters Association. Windy City Golf Tournament, 8 a.m. June 18th. Hogan Park, a senior life event. Keys for Hope Dinner and Cocktails featuring dueling pianos by Felix and Fingers, June 18th, Bush Convention Center. Call Gifts of Hope at 218-8714 or visit giftsofhopetx.org for more information. Nonprofits. Community Meetings for Rope Youth. The nonprofit is looking for volunteers to help feed insecure children this summer. Saturday at Tall City Brewing Company, 8 to 10 a.m. May 10th at Stonegate Church Building, Friday, 6 to 7 p.m. Permian Basin Gives, May 18th, a one-day giving event encouraging area residents to give to nonprofits, online at permianbasingives.org. Big Shot for CASA, Clay Shoot, 8 a.m., May 22nd, Jake's Clay. Show of Support Clay Shoot, July 30th, Windwalker Farms. Entertainment Calendar, Midland Northside Lions Club, 28th Annual We Serve Breakfast, formerly called Bunny Breakfast, 7 to 10 a.m. Saturday, Midland Park Mall Food Court. Henry Cho and Ron Hortman, 8 p.m. Saturday, Wagner Knoll, Performing Arts Center. Tickets are $54 to $104. Midland Rockhounds Home Opener, Tuesday, Momentum Bank Ballpark. Mike Ryan Band, 7 p.m. May 15th, La Hacienda Event Center. Tickets are $15. An Evening with Voctiv, part of the Phyllis and Bob Cowan Performing Arts Series, May 18th, Midland College. Contact the Midland College Foundation at foundation@midland.edu or 685-4526 to reserve tickets. West Texas Blowout, May 22nd, Horseshoe. E.T., The Extraterrestrial in Concert by Midland Odessa Symphony and Chorale, 7:30 p.m., May 22nd, Wagner Knoll Performing Arts Center. Tickets are $30 to $50. Cody Johnson, June 11th, Horseshoe. Cesar Arnelas Law, Mex-Tex Family Fiesta, June 12th, Centennial Park. Celebration of the Arts 2021, July 16th through the 18th, at the Bush Convention Center. Regular meetings and activities. Healing Yoga for People Recuperating from Cancer, 5:30 p.m. Monday, Yoga Sanctuary, 4202 Dawn Circle.
Jesse James Williams, age 85 of Midland, passed away on May 2nd. Viewing will be held Monday, May 10th from 6 to 8 p.m. at Avalos Sanchez and Thomas Funeral Home Chapel. A service will be held Tuesday, May 11th at 1 p.m., also at the funeral home. Interment will follow at Serenity Memorial Gardens. Avalos Sanchez and Thomas Funeral Home is honored to serve the Williams family at this time. Michael Reek, 27, of Roswell, New Mexico, passed away on May 3rd. A family visitation will be at 5 to 6 p.m. on Monday, May 10th at Nellie Picklin Welsh Funeral Home. Arrangements are under the direction of Nellie Picklin Welsh Funeral Home. Online condolences may be made at www.npwelsh.com. Sean D. Smith passed away on May 4th. A viewing will be held at Thomason Funeral Home in San Marcos on Tuesday, May 11th from 5 to 8 p.m. An additional viewing will be held on Wednesday from 1 to 3 p.m. Memorial services will be held on Wednesday, May 12th at 3 p.m. at Thomason Funeral Home in San Marcos. Arrangements are under the direction of Thomas Funeral Home. Margie Jean Griffin, 92 of Stanton, passed away May 6th. The family will receive guests from 5 to 6 p.m. Sunday, May 9th at Gilbreth Funeral Home. Funeral service will be held at 10 a.m. Monday, May 10th at First Baptist Church in Stanton, with interment following at Evergreen Cemetery.
Hi, this is Linda. I'm reading the Odessa American for Saturday, May 8th, 2021. Section A. New Executive AD, Raring to Go, by Ruth Campbell. Newly appointed Executive Director of Athletics, Tracy Borchardt, has been a part of Ector County ISD all her life as a student, an athlete, teacher, and coach. So it seemed natural that she would rise to the top of the athletics department as its executive director. To top it off, her parents, now retired, both coached in ECISD. Borchardt is the first woman hired to the top athletic director position in the district. Most recently, she was assistant athletic director, overseeing all the sports in Odessa. She will replace Bruce McCrary, who is retiring June 30th. Borchardt officially starts as executive director July 1st. I grew up in the gym because both of my parents were coaches. When my parents moved here when I was just a little girl, I grew up hanging out in the gyms, she said. My dad was a coach at Hood, now Wilson and Young Middle School, and he went to OHS. He coached football, cross country, and track at OHS. My mom coached volleyball at OHS. That's just how I grew up, learning sports, and I made a career out of it. Although she was more tied to Odessa High School, Borchardt went to Permian High School and played volleyball there. She also did some shot putting. She went to Odessa College and the University of Texas Permian Basin, where she earned her bachelor's degree. They didn't have sports at UTPE. I stayed just because I had an academic scholarship, and college was fun, she said. Following in her parents' footsteps, Borchardt went into teaching and coaching, and she's been in it for 32 years. A benefit to being an administrator on the athletic side as opposed to a coach is that she doesn't have to worry about preparing a specific team for a meet, for example. I just get to go to everything and be a part of it, and that's just so much fun. But you have to love the sports. You have to kind of learn them and grow to understand why you're there. Even though she doesn't know all the athletes' names, she gets a roster, tries to figure out who they are, and yells for them. It's real hard going to an OHS Permian game and not cheer for them, Borchardt said. She has to cheer for both. Borchardt said she didn't know she would get the executive director's position, and she was surprised when McCrary said he was retiring. Then going after the job, I was just hoping. But I was also prepared that if it didn't work out, it was okay because I liked my job as assistant director. I have fun at what I do, so hopefully if I don't get it, the new person coming in, I hope they like me and I get to keep my job. That was one of those keep your fingers crossed type deals, she said. When the item came up on the ECISD Board of Trustees agenda, the board voted to name her executive director unanimously. Borchardt also had the support of coaches she worked with in the administration office and in the field. I go to every event, and if I don't get to stay for the entire event, I'm going to be there for as long as I can be because I want my coaches to know that I'm there for them. I support them. That's just the way this department is going to work. She saw the coaches around her at the board meeting and wondered what they were doing there. I did not know that they were going to be there. It was a total surprise. I didn't even know for sure I was going to get the job that night. I was like, how does this work? I think that just goes along with the respect that we all have for each other. And it makes a great working environment, to be honest, Borchardt said. McCrary said Borchardt is well qualified to run the athletic department. She knows the district well, has a great understanding of UIL guidelines, and has the respect of the coaches. I look forward to watching her move the department forward, McCrary said in a text message. McCrary did a good job of laying the foundation, but she said they know the focus has to be on academics and getting students to understand that academics is first and athletics is second. We're going to continue moving forward with that frame of mind, and we're really trying to reach out to kids to hit some goals that are district goals that we're trying to incorporate into athletics. We've been very fortunate that our numbers are pretty good when it comes to percentages of pass-fail rate and attendance, but we've still got to get better at what we do. Hopefully, we'll be able to be the driving force to help the district on the improvements because we have a lot of improving to do all the way around. We're just going to keep working on that, Borchardt said. The struggle right now is with virtual learning. We can't move forward until we get all the kids rounded up and everybody's on the same page. To me, it's been kind of a culture shock, and we're trying to raise the bar. And what's holding us back, the virtual piece, is supposed to be moving us forward, and we're not reaching out to the kids. We've got to get our numbers up, because we know when our numbers are up in athletics, and performing arts is the same way, our kids perform better in school. We've got to reach out to those kids and get their parents involved, Borchardt said. She added that she was fortunate to have the backing of her parents. They pushed her and taught her to be a good person. That's what we've got to do with the kids we have coming at us. Somebody in our life pushed us, and now they need someone to push them, Borchardt said. Borchardt's husband, Barry, is a retired school teacher and coach. They had taught together since 1989-1990 at Crockett Middle School, and then they went to OHS together. When I came back here to the administration building, he retired. He coached football and basketball, and then was head boys basketball coach. Then he was the girls golf coach and taught AP World History, she added. They go to almost every event together. He loves sports, Borchardt said. COVID-19 news. Ector County, 17,223 total cases, 370 deaths. ECISD, daily cases, 2 students, 0 staff. Midland County, 17,443 cases, 267 deaths. Texas, 2,909,076 total cases, 50,527 deaths. U.S., 32,403,159 total confirmed, and 577,041 deaths. Find out more and where to get the vaccine at covidinthebasin.com or the CDC site at tinyurl.com/TZTRJLF. See the ECISD COVID-19 dashboard at tinyurl.com/Y6NTPTUQ. Quick hits. Good vibrations. Odessa High School's Bronco Legacy Choir will be putting out some good vibrations for a spring show, 7:30 p.m. May 14th and 15th at the OHS Performing Arts Center. The show will include singing, dancing, and skits. Tickets are $15 for the prime seating, which is the center section, $10 for all other seats for adults, and $5 for students and children. To get tickets, visit ohschoir.ludus.com. Local news roundup. Concert. The Midland Odessa Symphony and Chorale will present E.T. the Extraterrestrial in concert, 7:30 p.m. May 22nd at the Wagner Knoll Performing Arts Center in Midland. Doors open at 6:30 p.m. For tickets or information, visit tinyurl.com/5D9HFXXC or call 800-514-3849. Box office hours are from 1 to 5 p.m. Monday through Friday. Summer Day Camp. Campfire West Texas will be providing a summer day camp for children ages 5 to 12 at Gonzales Elementary, 2700 Disney. The summer day camp will be open from 7:45 a.m. to 5:30 p.m., June 1st through July 30th. The summer day camp will cost $90 for the week per child, and children will need to bring their own lunch. A morning and afternoon snack will be provided for each child, along with games, trips, sports, and many more fun supervised activities. No child will be turned away because of financial need. Financial assistance is available based on family size and income levels. For more information, call Campfire West Texas 570-4144. Local news roundup. Police searching for woman involved in Best Buy theft. The Odessa Police Department is reportedly looking for a woman involved in a theft at an electronics retailer. The reported theft happened at noon, April 21st, at the Best Buy, located at 6301 East Highway 191, an OPD press release stated. Investigation showed a woman reportedly concealed $550 worth of merchandise inside a child's jacket. The woman then exited the store without making any attempt to pay and left in a black Toyota Camry. OPD has released a photo of the woman that can be seen at tinyurl.com/4F696BFE. Anyone with information about the theft is asked to contact Officer D. Morgan or Odessa Crime Stoppers at 432-333-TIPS and reference case number 21-0006328. Landgraf's effort to slash STAR test passes Texas House. Austin. Legislation joint authored by State Representative Brooks Landgraf, Republican, Odessa, to reduce STAR testing passed out of the Texas House by a vote of 136-6 Friday, a press release detailed. House Bill 764 ensures Texas students are tested only as required by federal law instead of the state of Texas imposing additional standardized tests on our students, parents, and teachers, Landgraf stated in the press release. The bill eliminates any statewide test that is not federally required and eliminates end-of-course exams for high school students. HB 764 eliminates the social studies test for eighth graders as well as the writing tests for fourth and seventh graders, the press release detailed. End-of-course exams for high schoolers are also eliminated and replaced with a process to allow for high school students to be able to take the SAT or ACT or other norm-referenced secondary-level test in order to satisfy the federal assessment requirements. The bill also reportedly stipulates that if federal testing requirements are reduced, that Texas will immediately follow suit to reduce state testing accordingly. I hear more concerns about the STAR test than just about anything else. These complaints come from students, parents, teachers, administrators, and taxpayers. HB 764 is a direct response to those complaints, Landgraf stated in the press release. We still have a lot of work to do to fix this problem, but the passage of HB 764 clearly demonstrates that the members of the Texas House are listening to the voices of their constituents, Landgraf concluded. HB 764 now heads to the Texas Senate for consideration, the press release detailed. If passed by the Senate before the end of May, the bill will be sent to Governor Greg Abbott's desk to be signed into law. Hi, this is Linda. I'm reading the Odessa American for Sunday, May 9th, 2021, Section A. Midland. The Girl Scouts of the Desert Southwest will honor four women from the Permian Basin in this year's Women of Distinction Masquerade Gala. This year will be the 29th annual Women of Distinction celebration and will take place from 6 to 9 p.m. May 22nd at Midland Country Club. The honorees for this year include Executive Director for West Texas Food Bank, Libby Campbell, former Midland City Councilwoman Sharla Hotchkiss, KOSA-TV News co-anchor Shelby Landgraf, and former Vice President of Permian Affairs for Pioneer Natural Resources, Susan Spratlin. We select women who have made a difference in the community, CEO of the Girl Scouts of the Desert Southwest, Patty Craven, said. Women who have gone above and beyond what a normal person would do. We are recognizing women who are the leaders of the area. They are pioneers, or they are stepping up and giving other women an opportunity to grow in different fields. We love all four of our candidates. They are amazing women who have done so much in the Permian Basin. If anyone looks them up, they will be amazed. Campbell has been the executive director of the West Texas Food Bank since 2012 and completed the organization's successful $13.3 million capital campaign to build new facilities. Under her leadership, the West Texas Food Bank has grown to distribute over 10 million pounds of food through collaborative partnerships with 80-plus agencies. What they do over at the West Texas Food Bank is amazing, Craven said. They are helping the community give back. They also have kids programs that she set up, and that is right up the Girl Scouts alley. We love it when people want to educate girls and give them that opportunity to learn more about their communities and anything like that. Libby, with her Biodome, they do amazing educational programs that bring students in and teach them about growing and how food goes from a seed to the table. Campbell said she is honored to be named among this year's Women of Distinction. I'm extremely humbled to be honored in such a way by the Girl Scouts, Campbell said. They do such an amazing thing for young women in our communities to give them a voice and have them make true leaders of themselves as they become young women and adults. To think I would be in a group that those young ladies would look up to is a true honor. Hotchkiss is a nonprofit consultant conducting training on topics related to organizational development. She also served as executive director of Keep Midland Beautiful. Spratlin has served on many boards, including United Way of Midland, Permian Basin Petroleum Museum, UTPB Business School Advisory Board, Permian Strategic Partnership, and Priority Midland. Susan is retired, but she's a longtime Girl Scout and does things for her community. But she also used to be the former Vice President for Permian Affairs and made a difference in her community and has served on different community organizations, Craven said. She also established the Susan Spratlin Scholarship. Landgraf is the evening anchor and interim news director at CBS 7. With more than a decade of experience in broadcast journalism, Landgraf has been an active leader in the Odessa Midland area. She serves on several nonprofit boards, including the John Ben Shepherd Leadership Institute, the Junior League of Odessa, and the West Texas Food Bank. Craven says that tickets for this year's gala are still available and cost $75. If you go, Women of Distinction Masquerade Gala, 6 to 9 p.m., May 22nd, at the Midland Country Club, 6101 North State Highway 349 in Midland. Price $75 per ticket. Local news roundup. Grant funds for women veterans. The Center for Women Entrepreneurs at Texas Women's University recently announced its inaugural Veteran Woman Entrepreneur Grant Program, which supports women veterans in Texas who own their own businesses or are interested in launching one. Up to $250,000 in grant funds will be awarded in increments of from $1,000 to $10,000 to qualified Texas women veterans who are starting or who have existing businesses. It is the CWE's first grant program aimed specifically at helping veterans and is open to women entrepreneurs throughout Texas. The Veteran Woman Entrepreneur Grant application must be submitted before 5 p.m. May 14th. Winners will be announced June 12th, Women Veterans Day. Grant funding may be used for the purchase of machinery, equipment, or technology, acquisition of new inventory or raw materials, purchase and installation of fixtures or display units, property improvements, marketing, or other business-related activity that is aligned with the purpose of the program. Grants cannot be used for wages, salaries, and sales tax. Awardees must meet with the center's small business advisor, veteran mentors, and complete a virtual training series hosted by the CWE to receive funding. The course will cover topics related to business plan development, marketing, legal matters, accounting, and financing. For more information, frequently asked questions, and to apply, visit tinyurl.com/4T4HRRF9. Obituaries for Sunday, May 9th. Sean David Smith. Buda. Sean Smith passed away May 4th. He was born in Houston January 13th, 1967, and passed away at the age of 54. He married Jody in 1998. He is survived by his wife, his daughter Sydney, his son Jesse, and his parents, Douglas and Sandra Cox. A viewing will be held at Thomason Funeral Home in San Marcos, Tuesday, May 11th from 5 to 8 p.m. An additional viewing will be held Wednesday, May 12th from 1 to 3 p.m. Memorial service will be held Wednesday, May 12th at 3 p.m. at the funeral home. For more information and to sign the online registry, please visit thomasonfuneralhome.com. Dixie Young. Dixie Young, 91, passed away May 3rd in Mesquite. She was born July 27th, 1929, in Henderson, Rusk County, to Sam Fuller and Luberta Fuller. She married Ira Young, Sr. Dixie is preceded in death by both her parents, Sam and Luberta Fuller, her spouse, Mr. Ira Young, Sr., sons Tony Young, Mecca Young, and Rathel Young, a daughter, Diane Powers, her brothers, Doris Fuller, UC Fuller, sisters, LB Johnson, Christine Wright, and Della Moore. She is survived by Ira Young, Jr., and his wife, Ramisha, BJ Young, Ella Hall and husband Ed, and Kathy Young, 11 grandchildren, 15 great-grandchildren, 2 great-great-grandchildren, nieces and nephews. A visitation will be held Monday, May 10th at Odessa Funeral Home from 5 to 9 p.m. Homegoing celebration will be held at St. James Baptist Missionary Church May 11th at 10 a.m., followed by burial at Ector County Cemetery. Francis Chavez Walker. Francis Chavez Walker, 84, of Odessa, passed away May 5th at Medical Center Hospital. She was born April 4th, 1937, to Manuel and Teresa Chavez in Shafter, Presidio County. She married Willard Carroll Walker in 1979 in Odessa. She is survived by her husband, Willard, 5 children, Eddie Tenorio and wife Sally, Delia Fuentes, Al Walker, Deanne Patman and husband Jim, and Brenda Finley and husband Richard. 15 grandchildren, 37 great-grandchildren, and 1 great-great-grandchild, a brother, Pete Chavez and wife Socorro, and a daughter-in-law, Rachel Tenorio. She is preceded in death by 2 sons, Frank Tenorio and Eugene Walker, two grandsons, one great-granddaughter, her parents, Manuel and Teresa Chavez, and a sister, Margie Suchiu. Visitation will be held Monday, May 10th, from 10 a.m. to 8 p.m. at American Heritage Funeral Home in Midland. Funeral services will be Tuesday, May 11th at 10 a.m. at American Heritage Funeral Home. Burial will take place at American Heritage Cemetery. Alice Wallace Graham was born in Jordan, Montana, and moved to Texas after she married her husband Paul Graham in 1969. She passed away May 4th. Alice is survived by a daughter, Paula Graham of Odessa, son, Tillman Graham of Anchorage, Alaska, three siblings, Carl Wallace of Wisconsin, Kathleen Severance of Oregon, and Ray McPhail of Montana, as well as a grandson of Anchorage. No services will be held at this time. Arrangements are entrusted to Acres West Funeral Chapel, and condolences may be sent to the family online at acreswestfuneral.com. Bobby Dean, Bob Gage. Bobby Dean, Bob Gage, 79, of Granbury, formerly of Odessa, passed away April 6th. He was born July 13th, 1941, to Garrett and Viola Estep Gage in Bertram. He married Sandra Wolford in 1959, and they were married until her passing in 2002. He was fortunate to find love for a second time and married Marilyn Netherland in 2005 and gained a second family. Bobby is survived by his wife Marilyn Gage of Granbury, son Gary Gage and wife Carol of Missouri City, daughter Leslie Dixon and husband Joey of Odessa, brother Byron Gage and wife Sherry of Richmond, four grandchildren, six great-grandchildren, and several nieces and nephews. He is also survived by his bonus daughters, Julie Netherland of Granbury and Joni Paul and husband Ted of Weatherford, and two special grandsons. Memorial service will be held May 16th, from 3 to 5 p.m. at the Sky Harbor Community Building in Granbury. Memorial will be live streamed. In lieu of flowers, donations may be made to Hospice of Granbury, 1314 Paluxy Road in Granbury, 76048, or to the Alzheimer's Association at www.alz.org.
We've been reading from the Midland Reporter Telegram and the Odessa American. Please stay tuned for the weather, followed by the second hour's reading of the newspapers.